justice to the people.
The Justice Foundation podcast, from legacy to legal. Conversations and chats about cannabis weekly.
Too much confusion on this land.
Welcome back to episode 2 of the Justice Podcast. As you know, in the last episode, we spoke with the person who heads up Justice, Cheryl Murray Powell. Today, we're going to talk to Erin Thurmond, who's also on the Justice Board. He comes with a legacy background, and we're going to just talk about why bringing legacy into the regulated market is important. And his experience in that process. Erin, thank you very much for appearing on the Justice Podcast. Welcome to the show. Do you want to just introduce yourself quickly for listeners?
Thank you, Sean. Yes, my name is Erin Thurmond. Everybody knows me as E. I'm a longtime legacy operator from New York State. I've built a large distribution cannabis company stretching from New York to California, up and down the Eastern Seaboard. I've been involved in cannabis my entire adult life. I've never worked, always worked for myself, and I've been building a brand long before the legal market came in, long before it was popular or cool. We already had a brand that had significance and held weight to the people that were new. Legacy to me is not something that should be taken lightly. It's not something that is an afterthought. It's a live, thriving market that if we work together, it could be beneficial for all parties involved.
And what was it that made you decide? Because I presume if you're working in the legacy market, you don't have to deal with regulatory bodies. You don't have to deal with the tax office. Yes, you do have to worry about law enforcement. What made you decide? Because obviously plenty of people have decided not to come into the regulated market. What made you decide that this is the move I need to make and the reasons for doing so?
You checked the last box. You said law enforcement. Got to get tired of going in. That's it right there, man. There's really nothing else. But in truth of the matter is, though, Sean, I do believe in testing as well. I think testing is important because I've seen some horrible, horrible things done to marijuana. Very unhealthy things. So I think that people do need to know what they're ingesting in their bodies. And that's kind of how I pivoted into my company and my brand. The name of my company is Piff Farms Cannabis. And the whole premise behind it is pure intoxicating flowers. I only dealt with the farmers I always dealt with, always had a large respect for the plant. They would never do anything that was harmful to the body because they knew that the plant was something sacred. So I came up under operators and growers that really had an appreciation for the plant. And they taught me. So I have that same respect for it.
So in your past as a legacy individual or organization, you were dealing with a range of producers. Since you've moved into the regulated market, obviously that really limits the amount of producers that you can deal with. Have you managed that issue being moving from legacy to legal?
Product diversification. So one of the products that I have now that I'm really big on is our no nicotine, no tobacco vape pen. And we came up with this to address a couple of things. One, people are smoking a lot more. They're smoking more weed. They're putting grab in their weed. They're smoking Black and Mild. They're smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, like my mother did. God bless her soul. She smoked 2 packs a day. People are ingesting this nicotine into their body. They're just killing themselves, man. So we came up with a no nicotine, no tobacco vape pen. Mm-hmm. This is all fruit. So that was our little way to diversify our offerings. So we got something nobody else has. We feel that gives us a foothold.
Okay. I mean, let's deep dive now into the process that brought you into the legal market. Did you make a decision yourself and go and speak to people? Or did people come to you, and how did you make that change, and how long did that change take to happen?
Let me make sure I understand the questions you're asking me correctly. You're asking me, was I approached or did I go seeking out the help?
That's the first question. Exactly right. Right. Was it a decision that you suddenly made when you were having a coffee one morning? I really need to move into the regulated market because that's going to do better for me. Or was it after conversations you had with other people who sort of encouraged you to come from the dark side, to use Star Wars analogy, come from the dark onto the side of righteousness and good?
All right, gotcha. That's a pretty clever way to put it. But to be honest with you, Sean, it was more of an epiphany myself. Like I said, I spend a lot of time in Northern California up in Emerald Triangle. So I watched the industry being formed. So that was my whole thought from then. I was building my brand from there.
And from that point, what was the first thing you did to start that process? I mean, did you search out... I'm trying to sort of help other legacy producers understand
right. So,
how to start the process. Who do you speak to? How do you speak to them? What do you speak to them about?
Well, you know, so my thing, so for me personally, it was the path wasn't charted. So there wasn't somebody such as myself or the Justice Foundation that you can go and lean on. I never even heard of social equity until New York, because to me it was non-existent in California.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know how to go about that. After hearing everybody speak, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. My first thing is, what I don't know is, I seek legal counsel. So that was my thing from day one. I would advise anybody looking to get into the business, find legal counsel. Find somebody you trust that knows the law. Because a lot of times, the education of everybody isn't the best, but sometimes you just don't know what you don't know.
In this day and age, now we're 15 years in, there's a lot of cannabis council who have worked within specific states for a very long period of time and have an absolutely encyclopedic knowledge of what has happened historically in that state, which will help you understand what you can do in the future, correct?
Yes, I guess I said in a layman's term, you put it in legalese, yeah. I guess that's the best way to say it.
And
find somebody you trust. I mean, that can help you navigate, because there are a lot of predators out there. I have been approached by both sides. So mm-hmm. I understand. That's why I understand the question you're asking. I've been approached, and I've been the one that put myself in a space where I can be taken advantage of. So, got to be careful.
So once you hired counsel, what was the first thing that you spoke to counsel about, and what did they advise you in terms of that huge first move about thinking about going across from B to A, e.g. from the legacy market into the regulated market? Was it immediately a discussion about how you get licenses, or were there other discussions you could have before that?
I mean, one thing for sure, I know that they want to know if you're operational. That's one thing for sure that came up to me a lot.
What did they mean by that? Are you operational?
They want to know if you're still active in the illicit market now.
Yeah.
That was the number one question that came to me. I've been asked that, I can't even tell you how many times.
And what should be the answer be? The answer should be no, and I'm looking to do something else. Or I can't afford to feed my family unless I'm still operating in this other market.
And see, that's the catch 22, Sean. That's what the question everybody's faced with. What I've had, just only talking about my personal experience, what I've had to do is improvise. What I've had to do is pivot. What I've had to do is come up with another way. Because to me, the license is more valuable. I'd rather not look over my shoulder. I'd rather put a tested product out. That's just me, though. And I can't say that's the right way for everybody, because I know some people feel like, the taxing is an invasion. You're invading on our encroaching on our territory, and it's correct. You want our business now. And it's not correct. It's not right.
So how did you pivot in that period where you had to look for other sources? Because at the same time, you're looking for sources of money just to live generally, as yes. well as if you're applying for licenses, hiring counsel, that costs yes. money. Are you yes. saying that you really have to, you know, just get a couple of jobs during that pivot period, which I suppose is easier in this day and age because there's more cannabis businesses that you maybe could work with or work for mm-hmm. compared mm-hmm. to a few years past. I mean,
yes.
how did you negotiate that? I mean, how long did it take you? Was it 12 months? Was it 2 years? And how did you manage that in personally?
Well, personally, I'm still awaiting my license now. I applied in the last quarter four of 2023 for the New York State microbusiness license.
Yeah,
I'm still awaiting answer on that. So like everybody else is. And so let me put this something else. I'm glad this came to my thoughts just now. A lot of people in the cannabis space, especially if they were upper level of the cannabis space, they were making decent money. Not decent money. They were making very good money. So to see a business collapse, especially a nice, healthy business, you don't go from 6 figures a month or 6 figures a week to $12.95 an hour, whatever the price exactly of the right. job is. Man. So, you know, you're talking to somebody who may have had a job at McDonald's. These guys, such as myself, were doing very well. The businesses were thriving. These stores do very well. Cannabis sells very well, as we know.
So how do you manage that middle changeover period? And also, I mean, I presume what you're trying to also do when you're moving from a legacy to legal is bring your customers with you. How was that, or how is that experience happening while you're still waiting for that micro license?
It's going well, but you know, I like I said, for me personally, it's a journey. And coming from the legacy market where your story is not really told as much, it's more in the shadows. You don't survive being boisterous. You don't survive with your business all out in the streets. You don't survive with everybody knowing what you have going on. So coming out from the legacy market is a bit of a good thing and a bad thing. One, because it has such a stigma on it. Being the stigma is being erased now, being more socially accepted, it has, you know, I guess more and more people for me are coming along with the ride, coming along with the journey. They've gotten to see me go from a young guy in the cannabis space to grow up in the cannabis space. They, you know, so many people that's all they know me for is cannabis, especially the stories radiating out, and they're getting to say, oh, wow. Yes, it's been good. Then, you know, it's been also an eye-opener because some people, especially older folk, aren't really, they still have that stigmatized.
We spoke about the process of moving from A to B, the fact that hiring counsel is important. There's a couple of other things I wanted to ask you very specifically. Firstly, education. Obviously, when you've been through this process, there hasn't been much formal education or online education. You've just had to educate yourself. Now mm-hmm. these things are available. Do you advise that somebody coming from legacy should look up a cannabis business course, say like LIM do in New York, and involve themselves in learning?
I always lean toward on education. That's what's going to give you the leg up. And like you said, you don't know what you don't know. Cannabis is one thing about plant science, and it's other thing about the cannabis business. You may have skills in retail in the cannabis space as a retail operator, but you may not know about distribution, or you may not know about growing and cultivation. So depending on where you want to get in, like I said, you get inside the business, and it's gonna start taking you other places. You might find your places in security. You might find your places in being a bud tender. You might find your places in cultivation. So I would advise anybody getting into businesses to get some education, attend the seminars, because you'll learn. You'll start seeing things. People will gravitate towards you, and you'll gravitate towards the right people. So education is always key.
Yes, I tend to agree with you. And you know, it's worth pointing out to anybody listening or our Justice podcast listeners that now it's very easy to research cannabis education around the country. There's a number of courses in New York State now, both business, some law, and obviously a lot of science and growing based courses. We, you know, really have a look around and see what's available, because you will learn a lot and it will actually fit in with your time. The next thing I wanted to ask you, Erin, was how you came across the Justice Foundation, how it helped you, and how you believe it can help other legacy producers or sort of organizations.
I came across the Justice Foundation by seeing their table at a set up at an event. We were out in the Southampton, and they had a table set up. I just introduced myself like I said, everybody else. I'm walking around the room, find kindred spirits. Found kindred spirits in the Justice Foundation.
And what was the initial conversation that you had with them? And how was it advice that the Justice Foundation gave you, or was it practical help? I'm trying to get across is if you're a legacy individual or organization, you're listening to this podcast and you want to get in touch with Justice, what sort of questions can Justice answer for you?
There aren't many outreach programs into the legacy community right now. If there are, they're not very penetrating. Justice Foundation does penetrating work. They get to legacy operators. They come where you are. That's how you're going to get to the people. You have to go where they are. Can't sit in the ivory tower and ask them to come, because they're not going to come. It's untrusting. There's no trust between the legacy market and the government. Zero. So there's not going to be an open conversation. It's going to have to somebody come that they recognize, that sounds like them, looks like them, smells like them. They say, oh yeah, all right, we could trust that. Else it's not going to happen. They don't want to talk. Historically, they've been wronged. And they're being wronged again right now. So what incentive do they have to come out of the shadows or come out of the listed market unless there's some benefit for them? The benefit is, hey, get a license, stop doing this, and we'll stop attacking you. That's how they feel. That's how most of them feel. I know that's how I felt. I'd rather go this way and stop sweating.
So if Justice come out to you and start having a conversation, what should you as a legacy individual organization be asking Justice to do for you or help you with? Because as you said earlier in this conversation, you had to completely pivot what you did before in order to sort of start working or involving yourself with the regulated market. You're used to doing anything from the last 10 years, say, in one particular way, because you're operating outside law enforcement. What are the most important things you should ask Justice first that may, for example, save you money in terms of when you've got to talk to counsel later? What did you ask them?
I need legal counsel.
So that was the first thing you asked them. I mean, did you also ask them about how to communicate with the Office of Cannabis Control in New York State, and how you have those conversations? And how you find those people? What was it that really helped you when you had that conversation with Justice?
For me, it was the care and concern for the legacy market. You know, there's a lot of glossing over out here. A lot of people acting like they want to help. A lot of people saying they're going to help. A lot of people pampering to get licenses and co-licenses and fine. What I would warn legacy operators, there's a lot of predatory stuff as well. There's people that's just looking to latch onto them and ride them for a license. And that's the problem. There's no real care for that person who just gave up their entire business because they're trying to go right and they're going to be taken advantage of. So legal counsel was the first most important thing, because I was approached by numerous people. I still get approached by numerous people.
And they're trying to piggyback off your prospective license with a cell company, that sort of thing?
Yes.
So that's, look, this is an issue, and I actually want to spend a whole podcast talking about this particular issue, because it's a nationwide issue, and it's very true that a lot of ill-thought-out social equity programs around the country, state by state, allow inverted commas backers or silent partners with shell companies to come in and control a social equity license. So that is actually a big issue. I do want to talk about it in more detail in a future podcast. But for you, are you noticing that that is something that is still rampant in New York? It's not really controlled yet.
Yes, it's definitely rampant.
What's the best, I mean, apart from saying no, which sometimes can be quite hard, especially when people are, I mean, the best approach is if somebody approaches you with that particular proposal, the first person I should imagine you should be speaking to is your counsel, yes?
Yes, correct. I've been approached at least 10 times already for multi-millions of dollars.
And it's very tempting, isn't it?
No, not for me.
Not for you, but it may be for others if somebody...
But for somebody else, it may be tempting. Yes, I already know what I have. So no, it's not that tempting for me. I can't miss what I never had, Sean.
No, fair enough. So, before we finish up, I mean, why don't you give us a little bit of background on your business, where it is now, and what advantages for your business going forward the next 2 or 3 years have now you've decided to enter the regulated market?
Well, for me, where we're at right now, as I told you, we applied for a micro business license in quarter four of 2023. And we're waiting to reply for that. Hopefully we should hear something soon, whether we were one of the first 100 licenses that applied in the non-provisional window that opened up in, I believe, October 4th.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied very early. I know I've built up a nice brand equity. I believe a lot of customers will transition with me. Also, on top of that, I built innovation into my product. So I have new technological products and new physical products for the next 3-4 years. I have so many things I've been lined up and working on for so long that I can finally release the right way. So I'm excited for that. And so we built I spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley in California over in San Francisco. So tech is something I've really built into my company.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of tech plays that I want to add in to the cannabis. So.
And do you think this is the main advantage for you because you've entered the regulated market, it's taught you how to diversify and see that the cannabis market is more than just plant touch products?
Yes, I believe that's one. I think that's one of the advantages I have. I see the whole scope. I see the industry. I don't see the plant. I see the industry.
Interesting. And so, I mean, for listeners listening to this, if you're a legacy producer, it's more than likely it's definitely likely that you're going to be producing cannabis plants. And this is a way for you to start thinking about, yes, the difficulties of entering the regulated market, can seem very daunting. But as Erin points out here, it allows him to think about diversifying across a range of other products. Erin's very smartly talking about tech products, of which I can assure you were really lacking in the cannabis market. DUI tech products is a conversation I literally have daily. But also think about things like if you're in the legacy market, you don't really want to advertise yourself that much. So merch is really out of the game. But of course, as soon as you enter the regulated market, you end up like a musician. You make more money from the merch than the actual product that you're pushing. Is that how you see the future for you?
I see it just like that. Fantastic. I see it just like that, Sean. Very well put.
coming to the end of our conversation, is there sort of a couple of quick things you would like to say to legacy producers about coming into the regulated market before we leave?
You can use your gut. If you want to stop, if you're a real legacy operator, not some of these guys is saying that y'all and the Brads and Chads and people popping up, now there's legal one again. But if you're really a legacy operator, if you've really been in this business for a long time, if you've lost a lot, you're tired. Tired of fighting, tired of going through it with these people. That's who I would say make the switch. Come on in. Go through the tough times. It's going to be a headache. But do it because it's worth it. Because then you got to look over your shoulder no more. It's not even so much about the money. It's rather not look over my shoulder no more.
I
gave too much to the prison system. I won't give any more.
It's the same as a consumer. That's very well put, Aaron. Now, it's time to stop looking over our shoulders, both as business people, but also as consumers, and just operate in a world where cannabis is treated like alcohol or cigarettes. It's regulated.
Correct.
Everybody knows it's not perfect for everybody, but at the same time, hiding it behind a large curtain is of no use to anybody. Aaron Thurman, board member at Justice and business owner, Legacy to Legal. Thank you very much for being on the Justice podcast.
Thank you, Sean, for having me, man. Appreciate you.
Give more justice to the people.
The Justice Foundation podcast, from Legacy to Legal. Conversations and chats about cannabis weekly.
Too much confusion on this land.